put your mic up. You're going to break your neck, man.
Oh, my mic is on.
No, you're going to break your neck. That's better.
Yeah.
There you are. Now I can see you.
Cool.
Good. All right. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Doug.
And Will's here, too. He's hiding around somewhere.
Is mic on?
You know what? Yeah. Is this thing on?
Yeah, I hear it.
You know what? I think in the history of Ghostly Talk, we have not been able to get it together for this long. It's just ridiculous. Unfortunately, this week we had... It's really depressing. It really is, you know.
Bad things come in threes.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They do. We've been saying that since we got here today. Unfortunately, Christy...
Karma.
Who's Christy? I don't know who she is.
I don't know.
She had a death in her family this week, too.
Yeah. So she's up north.
She's up north with her family right now. So you're going to be hearing the OG, old school Ghostly Talk lineup here.
This is the crew.
Yeah, the original crew here.
The original crew. Well, the original crew plus Will.
Plus Will, yeah.
Like an honorary original crew.
Yeah, honorary. Yeah.
Really coming, and then I just...
You know what? We've talked about that. I'm like... How did Will get wound up doing this thing with us? And you just started coming over every week and you're just hanging out.
Well, you kept saying, you know, oh, we should get someone to do the computer stuff.
Yeah.
We do the show.
Yeah.
You know, and so then it just worked out.
I mean, he just
sort of showed up and hasn't stopped. And it really works out very, very well, I have to say.
It started back with like DDPI Journal way back in the day.
That was last summer. we consider that way back in the day? I mean, I guess we would.
Yeah, that's way back in the day.
That feels like, for me, it feels like yesterday, really. But, I mean, yeah, that was way back in the day, technically speaking, because a lot's happened over the last year.
Oh, too much.
Too much. Good and bad.
It's getting better, too. There's going to be even more stuff. You think we're busy now.
Oh, my God.
This upcoming month is going to be ridiculous.
It's going to be crazy. Karma's stepdad did pass away this week. And, so send your prayers to her, please. We're all pretty beat up about this, too. It happened really early in the week, too. Like Tuesday, she called me and said, I'm not going to be able to do the show.
Right.
She's going to try to be back for next week, but she's going to be staying out there all the way till like next Sunday. So, and she said she might be getting back late on Sunday, so she might not be here next week either. But we send our love and our prayers to Karma's stepfather.
Yeah. My thoughts are with her and her family.
But regardless, though, it's good to be back. It's good to have at least all three of us sitting here.
Yeah.
Like, at one time, at the same time.
It's so unusual.
It's been. The last month has just been completely off the hook.
Yeah. Well, you know what else has happened this last month? It absolutely drives me up a wall, okay? I listen to AM800 CKLW because I'm in the Detroit area market.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Detroit stations, well, So I listen to CKLW because even though it's a Windsor station and they totally rock.
They have a lot of good programs.
They do, except for one little thing I'm kind of ticked about.
Uh-oh.
I used to listen to a show called Ye Old English Astrologer.
Okay.
And it was Leslie Naden. And she would just sit there and take callers.
Uh-huh.
You could hardly ever get through to her. She was that popular. I mean, people would call and call and call. And they would, you know, wait in line. And sometimes they'd get bumped to the next week.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, it was difficult to get through to her show. Because
it's nice that they do that for them, though. Because last station, like, a lot of shows won't even, like, you can't get through.
Yeah.
If they put them, like, on a waiting list for next week, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, they really did. It was just an amazing show. Whether or not you believe in astrology and all that kind of thing doesn't matter. It was an awesome show.
Yeah.
And what happened was they bumped her.
You're kidding me.
They canned her show. They canned it. It's gone.
Oh, my God.
They canned it because they're totally revamping a lot of things over at CKLW. Probably not for the better.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what happened over there, but I'm really ticked off. And if you've ever heard Yielding English Astrologer, just remember her website is leslienaden.com. It's LeslieNaden.com. LeslieNaden.com. And she just totally rocked. I mean, she was, like, awesome. She's probably, like, 110. I don't know. She's probably younger than that. But she's, you know.
Yeah, Leslie sounds like a younger... Leslie, to me, sounds like a younger... Well, younger name.
Oh, really?
Know.
Okay.
Well, I don't remember.
Well, I've never seen pictures of her. I just know she talks about all this stuff that happened to her.
Leslie Nielsen's pretty old.
Leslie Nielsen is old.
Well, Leslie Nielsen's a guy, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But Leslie Nadine, I don't know. She sounded like just...
She sounds hot.
This little old lady, and she would read people's astrology charts and stuff.
I'm going to check that out when I get home.
I loved that show, and it's now off the air. Gone.
Well, if you go to her site, maybe she has a feed. Maybe you can stream her show.
I wonder.
I mean, email. Pretty much every show now, I mean, you can stream just about anything now.
Yeah.
All the bigger shows know what's going on.
Uh-huh.
They caught up to Ghostly Talk. They caught up to Ghostly Talk and said, hey, you know what? These guys have had the right idea all along. This whole AM FM thing is just a joke.
Well, we're so worldwide and everything.
Well, yeah, you know.
And
there's been radio shows that have been working 10 years to get worldwide, get syndicated on the AM FM, you know, bands.
Well, that's the thing. It's all excruciatingly political.
Oh, horribly political.
I mean, it's ridiculously political. Speaking of political, let's talk about what happened to everybody's favorite Coast to Coast. It used to be called Art Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Art Bell, and Art Bell was it. And
he was on last night.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's what I was getting around to. Last week, they announced, first of all, that the current, you know, host, George Norrie, signed some long-term contract.
Uh-huh.
So it looks like George Norrie is with Coast to Coast for a long time.
Yay.
Yeah. And if that wasn't enough, they kicked Barbara Simpson out. Just kicked her to the curb.
Barbara Simpson was great.
She rocked the world.
I loved her. You know, I had no idea about this either.
There was like Ian Punnett rocked as a guest host, right? So
Barbara Simpson was cool. I love when Barbara Simpson was on.
Yeah, he like occasionally gets to do a guest shot.
Uh-huh.
Then George Norrie like took over whatever he did when Art Bell retired, and then Art Bell would occasionally guest host, and Barbara Simpson did the weekends. Well, now they've kicked Barbara to the curb, although she will be a guest host. She will be part of Coast to Coast, probably not to, you know, so that they don't make people mad, but Art Bell took over on the weekends. Now, okay, I'm pulled both ways, because I totally idolize Art Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Art Bell is the king. He is the ultimate.
Well, he's the reason we're sitting here right now, probably.
Well,
one of the reasons.
I think I would have done this whether there was an Art Bell on a Coast to Coast anyway.
Because
I did that little radio show at WTWR at college, and I had listened to some shoutcast streams and stuff the radio on the internet, and I thought, well, why couldn't we do this internet kind of radio thing?
Well, yeah.
And you know, I mean, sure, I'm an avid listener of talk shows, and I'd heard Art Bell, but I, you know. I don't think that actually came into a factor of me wanting to do Ghostly Talk.
Well, I mean, as far as, I don't want to say you draw influence, but he's the guy that started it all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As far as the whole wave now of all these shows, which there's a lot of them. There's a lot of shows that kind of follow. I don't know if they're not like Ghostly Talk. We know that for a fact. But they come
not
around.
Much
they,
like Ghostly
yeah, they cover a lot of the same topics. They cover a lot of the same topics. You know.
Well, it means this stuff needs to be talked about.
Exactly.
Yeah. So now Art Bell is the weekend host of Coast to Coast.
Well, people are going to be very happy about that, though.
Oh, gosh, and I am so...
Yeah, it's great to hear that. I didn't know. I thought he was just guesting last night.
No, and what I'm really sad about is that, you know, Barbara Simpson now is just, guest host every so often. So she went from this wonderful thing, and I mean, Barbara Simpson rocks.
She does.
All I can say. And
she does.
Now she's, you know, guest host. She's...
Like you
reduced
said.
Reduced to the, you know...
Substitute teacher status.
Yeah, substitute teacher, just like Ian Punnett and all those awesome, you know. I just can't believe it. It's driving me up a wall. That's all it is.
Well, like you said a few minutes ago, politics.
That's all politics.
It's all politics.
That's completely, all that stuff with Coast to Coast and Premiere and all that, that's 100% politics.
I've said what I had to say about Norrie on this show.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I respect the man. I think he's a wonderful broadcaster. But, I mean, a lot of his opinions...
opinions?
There's a lot more to...
You have been visited.
Yeah, yeah.
There's an opinion part.
There's a lot more to it than you have been visited.
There's a little bit more, and I wish he'd bring that up on the
show. I really wish he would, because it would give it it would really well round the show.
Yeah.
And give
if he had, like, an idea or something. Oh, I mean... Oops.
Forget about that guest slot, huh? Jeez. You're not going to be getting any calls from coast to coast soon.
Dear Premier. I didn't say that.
This is George Norrie. I heard you said I have no idea.
Really, George?
No, George. There's no one said no, no, no.
I bet you get thrown on a couple of beatdowns, though. He's not a small guy, from what I've seen.
Oh, really?
He can, I think he can hold his weight. But who knows? I mean, I can run fast, too, so.
I
don't want to deal with George Norrie, dude.
Here we go. The internet, not the internet, the airwave radio, airwave paranormal talk radio, completely died, I think, when they did the Art Bell shakeup where he retired for the second time, and then they pulled Whitley Strieber off the air.
Whitley Strieber. It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
You got me into Whitley Strieber.
I'm like so missing Whitley Strieber. He's got his internet stream, you know, but I'm never around to catch it.
Neither am I.
But so you have to listen to the archive. But it's like, you know, when they pulled him off the air, my gas mileage improved because I used to actually drive around Friday nights, and I would just drive and drive and drive and drive for hours on end because there was Whitley Strieber for a couple of hours, and then after that was Art Bell's, you know, Friday show.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, my use of oil has decreased dramatically. Because now, what, we go driving up north 1,000 miles in a weekend.
Uh-huh.
That was probably my biggest oil expenditure, you know, this year. Whereas it used to be, like, every Friday night. So yeah. So this is what...
When you guys went up north, I don't remember this.
We went up...
I know you went up north.
No, last night we didn't go up north.
No, I know.
West.
Yeah, I know. I know.
We went up north to find... Hikey.
Yeah, I know. You drove the Descort up there?
No. We drove Will's truck.
Oh, okay. I thought you took the Descort. You guys stuffed in that car?
My Descort.
It's bad enough with me and you in there.
My Descort would not have been able to handle 99% of those.
Yeah, it's not exactly paved road up there.
No. It's all two tracks with you know, weeds. And one area had, like, it was just a lake that you had to drive through.
Uh-huh.
That was the only way that you can tell you're on the right road to find Hikey's tomb is that you have to go through this permanent, according to the local kids, permanent puddle. If you go through this puddle, I mean, if it's been dry for 6 weeks, 10 weeks, doesn't matter, you know, if there's been no rain, there is a puddle there on the way to Hikey's tomb.
Hmm.
And it had rained maybe the week before or something. So it was definitely a large puddle. And, no, the Descort, we'd be floating in there like a bobber.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, because it was pretty bad. But we did. The Descort would not have handled the trip to Hikey's tomb. It would have handled the trip up there and the trip back. But the during part on the two tracks, no. No. Would not have worked.
That would have been pure evil.
Do you know, I was just talking to the fellow from ParanormalNews.com.
Yeah, Jeff.
Jeff, I was talking to him, and one of the things that I mentioned that I think surprised him, because I've said this on the show before, one of the things you don't want to do, you don't want to lease a car.
God, are you kidding me?
And be a ghost hunter.
We've talked about... I take it from someone who knows who's sitting here right now. Next car I'm buying a new car in October.
Yeah?
I'm buying a new car in October, and I am going to buy it this time.
Because
it's not worth me. I thought, well, leasing is the way for me to go. It's low cost. And I don't drive that much. And then I started ghost hunting.
Yeah.
And that's like right after I started leasing a car. And now I'm like butting my nails every time I get in my car going, okay, how many miles is it there? I mean, that's why I'm horrible. That's why I'm so horrible about
it. If I don't go anywhere but to work and back just 4 days a week,
I will save myself $2,000 that I have to pay the Jeep to one of the big car companies.
Yeah.
You know.
At least buy a four-wheel drive.
No.
We need somebody.
I'm buying a Volkswagen, dude. I'm buying a Bug.
You're buying a Bug?
I've decided I'm buying a Beetle.
Have you gotten in one of them?
I love
them. They're huge on the inside.
Except for the flower pot. I'm going to take a lot of hits when I buy that car. I know I'm going to take a lot of hits when I buy that car.
Yeah.
But I don't care.
Flowers to stick onto it.
No. The flower, yeah, it's an option. You get the flower with the car. Mm-hmm. No, it does have the flower pot and the dashboard, but you know what, dude? That thing's going to get ripped out right away and put something manly there, like a beer tapper or something. I don't know. I'm going to get it black and get flames on the side of it. That'll make it manly, right? That'll make it mean looking.
That would be, yeah.
Well, they actually make them in the old school style too now. You remember the original Beatles with like the brown top on them,
yeah,
and that cream, that old school, like that signature cream colored paint job they had. That's what my grandfather drove a Volkswagen Beetle for 25 years, the same one.
Well, those things lasted for absolutely ever.
He painted it three times himself.
Oh my God.
I remember being a little kid, he'd have it in the garage with garbage bags over the tires, the wheels, and he painted it three times himself. That's the only thing that went bad in those cars was the paint job. Other than that, he drove it for almost his whole career at General Motors.
Oh my
God. I swear to God. And he sold it. He sold it. And it still ran when he sold it just fine.
That's awesome.
Leather interior, the same old school. What a wonderful car. Anyway.
Okay. You guys, we've got a really awesome show coming up.
Yeah.
We have to go to break now, but we've got a guest.
Yeah, Diane Larson.
Yeah, Diane Larson. In case you haven't been, reading any news whatsoever.
Yeah, on paranormalnews.com.
Paranormalnews.com had a bit by her.
Yeah.
What, last week or the week?
Yeah, like last week, week and a half ago.
Yeah. And so Scott L. emailed her and said, yo, you got to be on the show. And, well, she must not have heard us because she's going to be on the show today.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is, like, totally awesome. It's Mars and stuff like that. And her.
Well, she's the author of Door to Atlantis.
Yeah, Door to Atlantis.
Door to Atlantis, the Mars-Atlantis Alliance.
So she's coming up after the break.
We'll be right back.
So stay tuned. I got it. I got one of them toll-free numbers for folks to call in with.
Oh, you got it. What's the number?
Well, it's 1-888-520-1969.
Let me write this down. It's 1-888-520-1969.
That's it.
Excellent. Good work, though. I'll talk to you later.
Cool. Catch up.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
MrOlaf.com. See what you've been missing out on.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Services such as web and pop-free email, image editing, and logo design at very low rates.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Free streaming and downloadable videos.
MrOlaf.com. That's www.MROLAF.com.
Funny videos that will make you poop your pants laughing.
Thank you.
flipping off.
Did I make you laugh when my
class? They probably got the fade up. They were coming up and you heard.
The other one, you know, this thing is
like that. Yeah.
I really like
it. He was doing it before the show. I about fell out of my seat. I was getting everything ready, and I'm just and I'm just like
true because he was doing the loops.
Yeah,
he's doing the loops and everything, and then what happens is that one came on, and I of course it's like so addictive because of the blah stuff.
Yeah,
you know, and I did that. So.
I can't read.
You can't read?
I'm illiterate, don't you know?
You know, we have people sitting on the edge of their seats.
Yes.
Waiting through that entire break.
Yeah.
Right? Although, cool though it was.
Longest 8 minutes of their life.
Yes. In order to hear from Diane Larson. I mean, is this awesome
or
what? We have Diane Larson on the show right now as we speak. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Okay? In what will be an exclusive recount of a time when the Martians on Earth had a strong impact with advanced technologies, genetic engineering, and super intelligence, Diane Goodman Larson will be giving never-before-revealed details of their physical appearance, their emotional qualities, and how they arrived here on Earth from Mars as a small contingent of 22 scientists, priests, exclusive of... Do you know what?
What?
This is the bio?
Yeah.
I'm sure. Okay.
It's the bio.
All right. 22 scientists, priests, exclusive of the additional, oh, here it is, 2,000 elite educators, scientists, and priests who also left Mars at the same time.
Yep.
Diane has knowledge of a future event in the time continuum, a warning to our civilization, which she says will make your knees quake. In the presence of 15 witnesses, Diane experienced a traumatic time travel event when a powerful cosmic being, visible only to the moderator, suddenly blew open a portal in a room of people attending a seminar on ancient technologies, lost civilizations of Egypt, Mars, Atlantis, and Lemuria that took her instantly from the room in present-day New York directly to a dome-shaped granite complex in Atlantis, 13,000 years in the past. Since childhood, Diane has been an experiencer of a variety of paranormal events and starship sightings that, being an ancient scientist, priest, and an intuitive, allows her to experience. Her exposure to the ancient cosmic brotherhood has allowed her to experience many interdimensional life forms and planes of life. As they moved us up from the third dimension through the fifth dimension. Diane is the author of Door to Atlantis, The Mars Atlantis Alliance, Children of the Violet Ray, and On the Brink of Mastery, and The Last Wave, as well as a film script based on The Door to Atlantis, The Mars Atlantis Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
She teaches and lectures on the East Coast and West Coast on paranormal and spiritual topics.
Wow.
So we have for you guys... an expert.
Yes.
Somebody's written books, somebody who teaches. This is like a phenomenal thing. And of course, you know, we found her on paranormalnews.com just that, you know, just what, last week or the week before?
Yeah, we
awesome
can have a go.
Piece on there. So I have to say a huge welcome, Diane.
Hi, how are you, Scott?
Oh, good. How you doing? Good. Yeah. Hang on for 1 second, Diane, okay?
I'm gonna bring up her volume.
Yeah, we're gonna bring your level up just a little bit, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Is that which one is it? It's gonna be number that one. Okay. Try that.
Diane, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Ah, much better. There you are.
I can hear you much better. Yeah, you were in the background then.
Yeah, I wasn't working.
Yeah, I've had a number of paranormal experiences in my life, and I'd like to say that there are all kinds of people that, you know, you run into in your thrill to life, if you will. We have people with the sixth sense, people with the seventh sense, people who you call sentinels. We have walk-ins and people who are interdimensionals and things like that. And for people like sentinels, a sentinel is a person with very acute abilities, acute sense of hearing, acute sense of sight. They see much farther away than the regular person. They have they're very sensitive to touch and very sensitive to noises and hearing. I think there was a show on television called The Sentinel a long time ago. I think some of your viewers might be familiar. familiar with that.
Uh-huh.
At any rate, what I wanted to say initially is that we have these energy fields about us where our minds sort of stretch out into the world around our bodies, and these fields expand to interconnect with the fields and the environments of other people and animals and so on and so forth. And literally what you have is that you have worlds that are passing right through your living rooms. And in some cases, people with acute perception can sense the presence of other fields, energy fields, and they can link in with them, creating a whole new universe, so to speak, of sound and sight. So then you have what I call the seventh sense, which is like telepathy. And that's where you hear people saying, well, you know, I have this sense of being stared at. I can feel someone watching me, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And people like to say it's like a paranormal and it's like really weird and really strange. But in truth, in fact, it's normal. It's a normal power, if you will, for human beings. And telepathy comes from the Greek tele, which means distance, and like telephone and television, and path or pathy, which is feeling. And it's all about extrasensory perception. And what it is it's a natural part of our biological nature. What I wanted to talk about a little bit was that we have all these different levels of civilizations that we sort of that function in and around our solar system and things like that. And the Martians, when they had left their planet, they were at a point where they were harnessing the energy of stars. You have civilization that harness the energy of stars, you know, the energy output of stars that generate, say, about 10 billion times the energy of, you know, other types of civilizations. Then you have civilizations that harness the sort of energy output of galaxies and things like that. Some of the stuff that you see on Star Trek, you know, these like hyperdrives and antimatter drives and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when the Martians left Mars, a group that I call the Contingent, they were about 20 of us. They're scientist priests. We left a planet that was extremely masculine, with the magnetic fields going out and stretching out into the realm around it. Extremely masculine energies, and as we came through the, I guess, space, if you will, as we made contact with the magnetic fields of the Earth, it was a very sharp contrast. And what we found was that it became rather traumatic based on whatever memory and experience I went through, which I call the time travel event back then, is that as soon as we sort of made contact with the Earth's magnetic fields, it was a soft, very feminine, very sort of loving contrast, a very big difference. And even that felt sort of traumatic because it's the nature of the beings from Mars to be just really masculine. And the planet itself is like that, and its atmosphere and energy. So it was a huge contrast, you know. And anyway, back in 1994, I attended a workshop because of a video I received that had something called a star tetrahedron. It was two interlocking pyramids, and it sort of looks like the star that you have, the Star of David, except that it's three-dimensional. And it's called a Merkaba. And what happened was I attended this workshop. We went into a meditation in front of about 15 people or so. And somewhere after about an hour, the person who was giving the workshop, the woman, her name was Dawn, she said, if you were anywhere, I guess, in your meditation, I'd like you to say to yourself, ask your higher self, if there are any blocks in your energy fields and things like that, can you please remove them? If there are any blocks in your energy fields, can you ask your higher self to remove them? So I did that very silently. And as soon as I did that, there was this huge explosion of light in my mind, my mind's eye. And I saw this something like a color video rolling. And there was this other like whoosh sound that was sort of right behind me, and something like a portal just blew right open. And I found myself sort of like split in consciousness. I found myself in the room in New York City, which was where the seminar was. And suddenly I was standing in this room, looking around at a place that had granite stones, a circular dome-shaped building. Granite stones, a lot of computers going around in circles around the walls. And I was just there, and I was numb. I didn't know how I got there. A few seconds went by, and I felt, my God, you know, I recognize this place. I think I'm in Atlantis. So I could hear the person's voice that was given the workshop coming through, like almost through a time tunnel. And she was saying, if you are anywhere, I don't know meet or say that at all. If you're anywhere, I want you to look down at your feet and tell me if you're male or female. So I just happened to look down, and I saw these huge sandals, you know, like the sandals that Moses wore, leather sandals. And I look down, and I see these big sandals, and I see these huge feet, and then I see myself. I have a robe on, what you call a chusable, a long robe, and there's a rope around my face with lots of, not around my face, around my waist with lots of knots in it. And I look down, and I just sort of shiver because I realize, oh, my gosh, this is another time. It's another place. It's Atlantis. I'm a man. I'm Martian. And I just started to panic, and I felt like I just wanted to, I felt like I was in someone's nightmare. I just sort of landed there unexpectedly, and it was very scary. It was very traumatic, and I tried to find a way to sort of slam this time doorway shut, and nothing was working. So I was literally in two places at once. I was in the present in New York City in a workshop, my physical body, and then this big sudden sort of split in consciousness happened, and I was in Atlantis. 13,000 years back, somewhere in a technological room, place full of computers, I looked around and I saw a man standing over to the right side with dark skin, and I saw him punching in yellow and green computer buttons on a console, and I saw him turning his head to the right side, and every time he looked up, I said, well, let me see what he's looking at. I turned around and I saw this tremendous device that was suspended off the ground. It wasn't touching the ground, it wasn't touching the ceiling. And every time he punched in a button, it would revolve like just a few feet. And it was this huge star tetrahedron, which is like the Star of David, if you're familiar with it, but it's three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
This huge device that was made out of very, very light, thin, silver-looking metal. It didn't have any rivets or anything like that. I don't know how it was held together, but it was just beginning to spin very slowly and like stealth. And I looked at it, and I just knew that all hell was going to break loose just by seeing that. I was back in a time where I was beginning to remember something really like a cataclysm or disaster was going to happen as a result of this device. And at any rate, so that was the beginning of what was a part of that sort of time travel event. The woman who was conducting the workshop said that she felt a presence, a very powerful being in the room, who was sort of standing around me all the time, but only she could see, and I wasn't aware of it. And I believe he was responsible, probably, for blowing open this portal, if you will, and connecting the past 13,000 years back to the present right there in New York City. So it was a big deal.
I have a question.
So with regard to the Sentinel stuff and the paranormal things, ever since I was 3 years old, I was seeing things like astral bodies running through my house at night. You know, I was just a little child. I had this lady who was a family member who was going to have a baby, and I think that it was probably a very traumatic situation, and somewhere along the line things got really difficult. And I think she probably maybe had a sort of near-death experience. So she was at the hospital, I was at home. And in my bedroom, 3 years old, I see her spirit or her astral body just running out of the bedroom, into the living room, out the kitchen door. And I'm just running right behind her. And my mom was around just in time to grab me by the collar and say, child, where are you going? So I started seeing these sort of other life forms, other frequencies, other dimensional type life from the time I was very young. Around the age of 8, one night I went to sleep, and sometime during the middle of the night I woke up and I found something crouched, like in a crouched position, sitting on my chest. It wasn't human and it wasn't pretty. And at 8 years old, the only thing I could do was sort of squeeze my eyes shut really tight and hope for this thing to go away. I don't know what it was, but I went into this, like, silent and heightened state of fear. And I think the only way I can describe it is, like, it was like a little gargoyle-looking kind of thing.
Okay, that had to be, like, really frightening.
It was scary. Oh, my goodness. You know, at 8 years old, in the middle of the night, you're just sort of shivering under your sheets there. And there's this thing sitting on your chest. So I guess you can say it looks a little bit like what they call a chupacabras.
Ooh, those are even worse.
Yeah, those are one thing I never want to run into.
No, never.
I have a question, though, Diane.
Huh?
I have a question.
Sure.
When you were in, because the, this is like absolutely incredible, and there's a lot of material there. The one thing on the top of my list to ask you about that story about the time portal and back in Atlantis, you were remembering these things, like, was that a past life, or is it more like you became one with a person back then?
I became, what happened was, I went right back into an aspect of my life that I had lived only about 13,000 years ago. So I was literally reliving whatever occurred at that point of time. I just went smack right into that period of time, into the same building where we functioned as a group of that I call the Martian scientist priests.
Mm-hmm.
So I look down at my feet, and you know, I see him wearing these shoes. The robes that I had on, they were vertically striped robes. One stripe was sort of a beige. The other stripe next to it was the color of Mars. So even then, the group wore colors that represented the planet that they came from. I started analyzing myself at that point, and I noticed that I had no emotions. I was functioning at a level that was just like pure logic. It was super intelligence. The only thing I was focused on, or we as a group, we were focused on, was technology, science, astronomy. But there was also this aspect that was a priestly aspect, and that was very much into life and one creative force, a unifying intelligent force that I guess we call God. And we were not into religion, you know, so much as we were into more spirituality. So as a group, we functioned with one mind, so because we were telepathic. So we were all linked in together as this one consciousness group, the 22 Martians. So it was actually as if my life back then was reclothed, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I was right back in the situation, reliving it as it happened back then. And so I was a man. I was 10 feet tall, big feet, sandals, the chusable, the robe was what we wore with the rope around our waist. And at the same time, I was in New York City in my physical body, in this press, you know, in this expression that I have at the moment as a female. It was extremely traumatic. And all I know is that everything inside of me kept building, like a pressure building in my solar plexus that told me that there's something really wrong with the situation. It was so huge. The energies of that time, of those beings of Atlantis, were so powerful that there was no way that I could sort of run from myself. In as much as I didn't want to know anything else that was going to happen, I knew every single thing that was going to occur, and it was just like really bad news. So that was how it started out. And I remember looking up at this big device that started to spin, and when it started to spin, I could feel like this pressure building inside of my stomach. And what happened was, in the room in New York City, in my solar plexus where this energy was building, it was just like fear, sadness, grief, something blue like a gasket just poof right in the, you know, out of my stomach, out of my solar plexus. It was like a ball of energy that flew out. And, you know, in back in Atlantis, I'm standing there and looking around, and I can feel all this tension building every time this device started to evolve, and it would evolve very slowly. There was the man that was over to the right side that was pressing the buttons. He was dressed in, like, I would say, sort of like a 60s look. He had on a vest, a short sleeve t-shirt, just a regular pair of pants. In the back behind me, I saw some people who were dressed like Egyptians in the very revealing sort of bronze, gold, and copper colors, you know, that sort of wear that you see from the ancient Egyptians.
Mm-hmm.
And they were coming up from a lower level with massive crystals that were about 5 feet high, about a foot thick, and about maybe 4 feet wide. They were really massive. And I got the sense that those crystals were somehow responsible for part of the energy and power that powered this device. The device was not connected to any wires. It wasn't connected to any electrical outlets or anything like that. It was literally connected to the computers by electromagnetic energy lines. It was what you call electrogravity that was being used at that time. So it was just suspended on its points, and it was two stories high.
Did you get a sense that if you were, because you were only back there for, would you say, seconds, minutes?
Yeah, it lasted about 30 to 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And in that point in time, when I'm in the room and this woman, Dawn, she says to me, I'd like you to go outside of the room and tell me what you see outside. So I go outside. I'm walking outside in this robe and, with a very long stride, very serious manner, no emotions whatsoever, just high intellect. I go outside and I see beautiful green trees. It was nighttime at that point. I looked up and I saw the stars. And just ahead of me, a few feet away, I see these other 22 male beings that are sitting in a circle on the grass, and they were waiting for me. Back inside of the room, I remember I was standing in there observing this thing, this device that was revolving counterclockwise very slowly. And I think they were putting it through like some sort of test run, the man with the dark skin. It was going through sort of a test run, but we were having miniature meltdowns. And at one point I saw the point at the top that was towards the ceiling but not touching it. It just suddenly blew out this huge black explosion. It just turned black, blew off one of its points. A few seconds later, another one off to the right side just blew up. There was no smoke, interestingly enough, but when you're dealing with electromagnetic energy, sometimes you don't see that sort of thing. Like, it's not like a regular fire. It just blew out and turned black. So I'm coming outside to these people, and in my mind, I'm thinking, this experiment, whatever it is, the situation is just wrong. It's not ready. It's too soon to activate it. There was some sense of urgency to get it up and running and reeling and spinning, and because that's what it does. When you activate this device, it just spins at tremendous speeds, like at warp speed. And it creates a sort of hyperdimensional space, so it's like a star tetrahedron or star inside of a sphere, which is the dome-shaped building, and it creates this hyperdimensional atmosphere or energy, and which is fourth dimensional energy. So it goes, you know, the speed of light, beyond the speeds of light, the different speed ratios you can get, and they were ready to start this thing cranking and running, and I'm coming out to tell them, you know, it's not right. It's the wrong time. It needs more time to be fine-tuned, things like that. But with every thought that I have, I know it's already resonating in their minds because, like I said, we were of one mind. So they already knew what I was coming to say. So I sat down with them, and I tried to tell them, we need more time. It's not a good idea to activate it. And what I saw happen was something I call the intruder. One of them sort of became the leader of the pack. We didn't know emotions of anger, not really emotions of love either, things like that. There was no feminine anything about us. And all of a sudden I saw something red come into the eyes of this individual. He became vehemently opposed to what I was saying. He wanted to get it started going. I said it's a bad idea. If for some reason we start this thing going, a part of the creation is just going to get blown away, literally. Human life, animal life, even interdimensional planes will be affected. And that was what the big problem was. And he and some of them, the majority of them, did not agree with me. And two of the other Martians there who were working with life, we did things like genetic engineering and a lot of what we're having now in our present civilization, like gene splicing and so on and so forth, we did that. So the two people or three of them that were working with life got up and just walked away because the other 17 or so of them just didn't want to go along with the idea of waiting and fine-tuning it first. So I tried my best over and over to convince them that it was a bad idea to get it started so soon, but there was this sense of urgency, and I couldn't succeed with convincing them. The guy that had the sudden red energy in his eyes, he just protested. So eventually I just got up and I walked away. And I could hear Dawn's voice coming in from New York City into 13,000 years later, because it's like being connected at a tunnel, like almost like a wormhole, which is not evident, but you have to think of it that way. And I started walking away to the something I call the Great Wall. It literally looks a lot like the Great Wall of China. It's the Great Wall of Atlantis is what I call it. Huge megaton granite stones, similar to the ones that are inside of the dome-shaped building. The dome-shaped building was made of huge granite stones that had no creases, like how we build brick by brick and things like that. It was nothing like that. They were just these huge things. And it looked like about 40 feet or more high. and it literally split the island in two. So I started walking toward it, and I could hear Dawn's voice coming in from New York City saying, where are you going? What are you doing? I said, I'm walking away from this really stubborn group of Martian scientists, and I'm not going back. She said, what are they doing? I said, well, they're watching me walk away. She said, are they angry? I said, no, we don't have those emotions. She said, are they going to come after you, or are you afraid that they will come after you? I said, no, they won't come after me. And I just kept walking. And so I left them there. I spent, like, what was the whole night walking the length of this great wall of Atlantis, and finally I got to an area where I saw water rolling in on a beach, and I turned and to go over to the other side of the wall, and something hit me full in the face. It was something like emotions, softness, soft energies, innocence, feminine things, and it just startled me because, like I told you, we were masculine through and through. We were off this Richter scale, literally, with masculinity, no emotions, and so that was startling for me. And when I looked up, I saw these what I call little people. I'm 10 feet tall. In the distance, I saw the two Martians that scientist priest that left before me, standing over by trees, and they're towering above these other beings that were over there. The Martians had very powerful eyesight, and these little people were about waist high for me, and I saw them playing. It looked like they were playing. I heard Dawn coming in again. She said, what are you doing? What do you see? I said, I see little people. She said, what are they doing? I said, they're playing with the plants. I don't think I had any concept of what agriculture was, really, because I was into we were into technology in a very big way. And I said, they're playing with the plants. I think it's agriculture. And just after I said that, I felt this, I'm not sure what point in time it was. I just know it was nighttime. I felt the atmosphere just erupt a few feet away, well, feet or miles, depending on how you look at it. There was this huge eruption, like if the sky just sort of warped and waved. And I just felt the atmosphere ripple in Atlantis. In New York City, my stomach just blew like a gasket. My solar plexus, the energy and things like that, went across the room to other people who were in there.
And that was
then I saw this tremendous wave of energy, electromagnetic pulse, just coming at warp speed. It came out of the dome-shaped building, came through the Great Wall. It blew out several of the megaton blocks, came straight through me, right through the little people, right through the trees, and just kept on going at warp speed. It was like the Atlantis Express from hell. And what that was is that they had gone ahead and they had activated this device. And so when you flip the switch, so to speak, it spins counterclockwise at tremendous speeds. It creates an energy field, electromagnetic field, that shoots out. And the size of this thing of concentric circles of energy and vibrations I saw coming, they looked invisible, sort of like what you would call, like the qualities of water, like glass, like fluid glass coming at you. And it just came straight at me, straight through everything. It knocked me down, the people down, the trees, everything, and kept on going. And the size of it could have been something that would take it, I thought, perhaps two-thirds across the planet. Two-thirds of the way up across the planet.
Did they have, like, motivation for this? I mean, obviously, you know, in this...
Sense of urgency, I mentioned, yes. There was a sense of urgency, and interestingly enough, I didn't think that we should do away with activating it altogether. I just thought that we should fine-tune it before we started it. There was a sense of urgency, and there's something I call the equalizer. For some reason, I'm thinking about something called the equalizer that is going to have a huge impact on the planet. The purpose of starting this this fourth dimensional device going to create an electromagnetic field, this hyperspace, was to create this field to protect. And I had to ask myself over and over, to protect what? To protect the people, to protect the continent, to protect the planet necessarily, because that's how far that field of energy can go. And so we were trying to protect from something, and my feeling is that it was what I call the equalizer, something that was probably coming in from outer space, that would have been coming into our atmosphere, Earth's atmosphere, and impacting the planet. So there was a reason for doing it. I mean, we weren't crazy, and we certainly would not have just gone and created something like that to just destroy ourselves. There was an urgency. There was a very important reason for it. And
Well, it sounds like they had control over a lot more power than we do, because right now, if something were to come at the Earth, all we could do is probably...
Pray.
Yeah, pray, and maybe set off an atomic bomb or something at it, you know, but it wouldn't do much more than deflect it. It sounds like this would make some huge...
It's actually a sphere. It would be an electromagnetic field of energy, electromagnetic, sort of like a pulse, but it wouldn't just expand out and keep going and not do anything. It was supposed to cover the area of the continent, the dome-shaped complexes, the pyramids, everything that was there, including everything that was there, including the people. So it was supposed to act as a shield, if you will, as some kind of a shield for something that I felt was coming from something that was going to be at times more destructive and cataclysmic than anything that might have happened down there. So it was a sense of... you do it and you fail, something is still going to come in. You do it and you succeed, something is still going to come in through the atmosphere. And so, you know, it was, I think that was the reasoning behind it. But what I was perceiving and foreseeing, the vision I was having at that time in that masculine body that we had as 22 scientist priests, was that there was going to be tremendous destruction if we didn't do it perfectly. So we sort of started it just... a little too soon, I guess. It needed fine-tuning. At any rate, with all destruction, I mean, Dawn, back in the room in New York City, people were pressing all kinds of energy points on my body, my head, my chakras going down the front, the power centers going down the front of my body. They were feverishly working on my physical body because with the destruction that happened there, and when this field of concentric energy circles came right through me, I was literally dead, and so was everything else. I just died. And so they were...
Your physical body died?
Same thing from happening.
No, the body she was
connected
to in the past
died
at that point.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Everything that was around that experiment area of the dome-shaped building was just totally destroyed. So back in New York City, they were feverishly working on my body because I was looking at the destruction, and all of a sudden Dawn pulls my attention back into New York City. She says, I'd like you to come out from there, come out from this area where you're seeing all of the little people, the Martian long bodies lying down, because I wasn't seeing water at that time. I got a sense that everything was lying down. The trees were flat. I could see them flat. Everything was being flattened out as I saw this thing coming at me at warp speed, and this invisible field of circular vibrations, if you will. And she pulled me out of that scene back into New York City and said, I'd like you to go forward about 2 weeks. And so instantaneously, I went forward 2 weeks. She said, I'd like you to come up over your body, up over the scenery, and look down and tell me what you see. And so I look down, and I'm seeing basically nothing. I said, I don't understand. I can't really tell what I'm seeing. I see a lot of blue down below me, nothing but blue stretching for miles. She said, okay, why don't you come back in time about 1 week? And instantaneously, this happened. I just moved back 5 days, or 5 days, maybe 7 days. There was no sense of time, really. But, and it brought me to a point where she said, I want you to look down and describe what you see. So I'm up above, looking down, and I see, the bodies lying down, the trees lying down, and everything was under very, very calm blue water that was about 9 feet deep, and nothing was moving. There were no waves. It was very, sort of very quiet kind of water, and everywhere was covered with blue ocean, everywhere you looked. And so when I was 2 weeks into the future, and I looked down, and I didn't recognize anything because all there was below me was blue, and I didn't understand that. You know, it was just a totally different scenery that compared to, you know, all of the trees and the life and the buildings and things like that that I was looking at just before that. And so I think she had taken me a little too far into the future for me to understand what I was seeing. It was very traumatic. So with these gut-wrenching sobs now inside of the room in New York City, I literally collapse. And I'm looking at the scene in Atlantis, and I'm seeing the Martian, the scientist priest bodies lying down, stretched out under the water, the little people that I call maybe their nature spirits. The trees are all flattened out, and there's this 9 feet of deep water, just there, very calm, very still.
Oh.
And I got this sense that, you know, I don't want to be here in Atlantis, and I don't want to be there in New York City. I just don't want to be anymore. I don't want to be. I don't want to exist. And I started leaving my body in the room in New York City, literally coming out and just getting ready to die.
Wow. Well, this is heavy stuff.
Yeah.
This is very heavy.
Let's take a break. We've got a couple minutes to take a break. And I'll
let these people take this in because this is a lot.
We'll talk with you through the break. And I'm going to, but yes, let's
take a quick break here.
And we'll be back after this with
Diane Larson.
Actually relived the destruction of Atlantis, and we'll talk with her more about that. And hopefully we'll find out more about the pyramids.
Yeah, oh yeah.
We'll talk about that after the break.
We'll be right back.
Right back.
Stagehand tools.
You have tools. Know where to put them? Want your hands free to do other things? Try a stagehand tool belt. Stagehand tool belts can accommodate any task, whether you're building a stage or bringing down a haunted house.
Stagehand tools.
For all your industry needs, we have, for example, EMT pouches, radio pouches, tape measure holders, mailbags, and numerous flashlight accessories. Just go to
www.stagehandtools.com.
And see all the cool stuff that Stagehand Tools has for you.
www.stagehandtools.com.
We know where to stick it.
We'll be right back.
don't feel like I took a break at all.
I know.
I'm just like,
this is so awesome talking
yes.
to Diane, because she's described for us her story. You know, all of this is in her book. She wrote the book.
Doors to Atlantis.
Yeah, the Door to Atlantis, the Mars Atlantis Alliance.
Uh-huh.
Diane Goodman Larson is our guest. And she spent the past, 40 minutes or so telling us about this experience that she had.
Yeah.
Where she connected with, during a meditation session, connected, a guided meditation kind of thing, in New York. And she connected with her counterpart, her previous self, in Atlantis, where they were doing the experiment to protect the Earth with this star tetrahedron, like crystal machine. It wasn't, you can't think of it as like modern technology, our technology, because it's a completely different technological base.
Mm-hmm.
But this machine, which in effect was, all based on energy manipulation and things like that. It would spin, and the goal was to protect the Earth from some impending disaster. Unfortunately, it wasn't ready yet, and it caused the fall of Atlantis. So I want to find out from Diane more. What then after, because we had gotten up to the point during the guided meditation, she took you 2 weeks into the future after this traumatic event. 2 weeks, this would still be 13,000 years ago, but 2 weeks ahead of where you were, the experiment happened and then went awry, and then you were looking down, you could see just water, and then you went before that and saw that Atlantis was basically sinking into the water with all the flattened trees and structures and everything like that completely on the ground, but 9 feet underwater. That's where we were when we left off. Tell us what happened then.
What happened then was after I saw this destruction and the damage to life and that had occurred from this electromagnetic pulse that went out, what I felt was probably two-thirds of the planet, maybe half of the planet at most, is that I started to collapse in the room in New York City. I just sort of curled up like a little piece of, a little ball of flesh on the floor. I just crumpled. I came out of my body, and I was literally dying. I just didn't want to be here, and I didn't want to be there in the past anymore. And suddenly Dawn said to me, she said, "What was your contract when you reincarnated in this life?" And I got very confused. I heard the question, and it just sort of snapped and pulled me right back into my body to use my intellect to try to understand what she was asking me. I said, "I don't understand. I'm confused." She said, "What agreement did you make when you incarnated in this life now?" And I couldn't find an answer. So all of a sudden there was this voice that came on that said, "You have to teach the people spiritual things." And I just shuddered. And in my gut-wrenching sobs and my sadness and the grief of 1,000 people that I felt there with my head hanging over, I just repeated the words, "I have to teach the people spiritual things." She said, "Okay, that's what I was looking for." So I do have some responsibility in this life, based on the question she asked me, to teach spirituality. And she said to me, "I'd like you to look up at the people in the room." And at this point, I could feel 15 other people that were there. They were touching my feet, my hands, my head. I had hands all over me. And she said, "I'd like you to look them in the eye, and I want them to tell you I love you." So I can hear them saying, "I love you, Diane, I love you." And if something isn't working right, my neck gets locked in place with my head down. My neck gets locked in place, and no matter what I do, it wouldn't move to look up. I couldn't look them in the eye properly. And suddenly I had to think of something, to try to make my brain connect with my body again and make everything function perfectly. And it just came to my mind to say, "I need you to forgive me." And so in gut-wrenching sobs again, with all this grief and sadness and tears running down my face, I said, "I need you to forgive me." And everyone just sort of hugged and, came and surrounded me and stuff like that. And then, and only then, was I able to move my head and lift my, move my neck and lift my head up. And right then and there, I just heard this boosh again, and the portal, this time-dimensional portal, this stargate, whatever it was that this being that I heard speaking in a male voice had blew open, it just suddenly shut with a loud sort of whoosh behind it, and that was it. and that was the end of the whole experience. And I don't know for sure who this being was, but I do remember the night before this entire seminar, I was asleep in my bed in New York City, in New Jersey, and somewhere in the middle of the night, this man, this being, just stepped right through the bedroom wall from outside. He just stepped right through the bedroom wall and came and stood over my head. He was a tall being, a very young cosmic being, I believe one of the Great White Brotherhood, because they were very influential in my growth at that time. And he started to spin this little device over my third eye. I saw him with my eyes closed, and then I opened my eyes and I said, "Who are you?" He said, "It's okay, don't worry, everything would be okay." And he stood there spinning this little device that looked like, it looks like the skeleton of the Star of David. Like if you could draw a skeleton of it, like if you can put two X's together and sort of spin them just barely off each other and leave them like that. That's what it looked like. It was made of a kind of bronzy, copper type thing, some ancient device he had in his hand, made of metal. And he was spinning it over my third eye. So I believe that my preparation for this event, this time travel event, started from the night before, when he just stepped through the wall as if it was not there and appeared right there over my head.
But even despite that, you didn't expect to have basically a life-changing event
and
the
like
next
that,
day.
No.
Yeah.
But what happened as a result of that is that we, the planet, the consciousness, fell several dimensions down. We fell several dimensions down through the different consciousness levels, and it landed us in what was called the third dimension, a totally different consciousness level. So we're not in the third dimension anymore, however, but that's where we were for a long time. And based on other experiences that I've had that I call psychic events or paranormal events, I saw that the third dimension was a dimension of slow, long time. We were in a very dark place, our planet, for quite a while. And but now we started moving back up. We took a kickback, sort of, the planet, around the September, the 9/11 tragedy we had 2 years ago, as they were moving us up. That explosion caused the planet to sort of reverberate and kick back just a little bit. But
what kinds of signs do you see around us now that we're basically, you mean we're gaining like spirituality, we're growing again?
Yes, we're actually moving forward. I have this other teacher by the name of Junvalo. He is a Melchizedek. Actually, the device that I keep speaking about, the Star of David, is a symbol of the Order of Melchizedek. They are an order of priests. And basically, at that time in Atlantis, we looked like we had no hair at all. Our skulls, the physical description I can give, it's that the skulls were slightly elongated. We were human-looking, very human-looking, so you can call us humanoid. The only difference was we had this fairly big skull that was sort of elongated backwards rather than upwards. And we had very powerful eyesight. We were able to see through the density of the human body. You can see right through to the bones, the veins, of the human body, and you know, the sort of the sublevels of the human body, we could see right through. And there was no technology associated with our eyes. We were just a different frequency, a different life form that was somewhat more advanced. When we came here, we left our planet for a reason also, survival. There was an additional 2,000 that I understand, 2,000 Martians that left at that time. They're well known to be people who are involved in financial companies, running governments of companies now, things like that. They were very different from the 22 scientist priests. But that symbol was a symbol of the Order of Melchizedek, the star tetrahedron. You can see it in churches, hospitals, lodges, ancient books and things like that, you know. And so following the 9/11 kickback, where we actually were advancing and moving up through several levels of life that I was seeing, of the lower levels of the fourth dimension, as we left the third dimension, I saw various life forms. I saw the Caucasian blondes with the blue eyes. I encountered those a couple of times. I saw blue beings, like electric blue beings, they looked like holograms. I saw what you call reptoid beings, that people call reptilian, and they're actually a part of our planet as well. And but now, after speaking with Junvalo, he said, "Well, we're moving again. In the past year or so, we started moving forward again. So we're actually heading up, back up through the dimensions, heading up towards the light. And so the next several years that will take you to the end of the cycle is going to be trying circumstances and a period of time where people will get to choose what they want in terms of light and dark and so on and so forth. But we're moving from the third dimension, which was a dimension of slow, long time, and we're moving to a future time, planes of the fourth, fifth dimension, where everything will start manifesting at the speed of thought, and we have to prepare for it spiritually and otherwise. We'll have to prepare for it. One of the elements there would be love, of course. That was something that the Atlantean scientist priests did not have. We didn't have the emotion of love, that feminine aspect. And so because of that, our influence actually affected the entire planet and the consciousness of the people to the point where the humans actually did not feel as much love as they could feel and express. It didn't mean they couldn't feel love at all. It just our influence and so on that whole time affected everyone.
Diane, I have a quick question.
Yes.
You just mentioned a couple seconds ago in regards to the speed of thought.
With
the speed of thought.
Yes.
I know in this day and age, I can feel it myself. Even over the last like 3 or 4 years, for example, I know my life now as it was 3 or 4 years ago is a much higher pace, like a much faster paced life.
Yes.
I mean, everything is quick, get it done. Everything is urgent. Everything has to be done right away.
Yes.
With the technology that we have. Do you think that what's going on right now is a physical manifestation of what we are coming to? In your opinion?
We have moved up from an area where everything was really, really slow. Where we were in the third dimension, first of all, let me say that the catastrophe that the cataclysm I speak of that is connected with the electromagnetic device created this space that we've come to know as the Bermuda Triangle. That's the connection that I need to make. It is known as the Bermuda Triangle. So we've actually moved up these several different planes from the third dimension, which was a very dark place. The third dimension looks like almost like pitch blackness, and we were very far away as a planet from other life. Literally, we were in quarantine, and that's how I experienced it on a very big level, with a totally different experience sometime later. But we were literally in quarantine, and we started moving back up. The light that we have that enables us to see is just a little sliver of light on the scale of on the light spectrum that allows us to see properly. So we're coming out of a literally blackness, and what you call the eternal night that you've heard so many people speak of in whether it's religion or philosophy. And as we advance up through the fourth dimension, there was more light that we were approaching. Every plane that we went through that these cosmic beings brought us up through in the late 1990s. Then we got to the point where there was a kickback with the 9/11 tragedy. And then now we're just beyond that. We're moving forward again. And everything is speeding up. So when I say with the speed of thought, I have this other experience where it's also a time travel experience. And it took me into an area, a dimension, in the higher levels of the fifth dimension. At that time, the teacher that I had was calling it the 13th universe, I think was what he said. And I just got taken forward very quickly in a similar way as the Atlantean experiment. And I was in this space that looked like brand new, like there was no one there that had ever touched it or walked on it before, and it was now being created. There were beautiful colors of magenta and blue and green. And I saw something like planets and things like that just sort of popping out of a space that was directly ahead of me. And I looked at it and I said, oh, you know, I don't belong here. I felt like I was tracking in like mud on my shoes sort of feeling. and the moment that I decided that I don't belong here, I was going to turn back and go back to where my body was in another room at a seminar going through, you know, a sort of similar situation at a time travel event. Someone approached me wearing robes with long sort of golden hair, long white robes, and just took my hand. He just appeared out of nowhere, a very gentle, loving being. And the love that came from him was so strong that it made my knees start to collapse. I literally started to collapse. I couldn't handle it. And he said, no, why don't you come? I'll show you around. I'll give you a tour of the place. So I'm walking around in there. I'm looking around. There's not much to see. There are energy falls, like waterfalls, but it was energy falls with green and yellow, things like that. And then he said to me, I'd like you to create something. So I didn't know what to do. I thought of pyramids. I said, oh, you know, I'll create a pyramid. And just with the thought, before I could finish the thought of I will create a pyramid, at the point where I said will in my mind, this pyramid, energy pyramid, just appeared right in front of me with jagged lines. And I just was so startled, I stepped back. So it was coming from my mind. Whatever I thought manifested. So we're going to a point where things will be manifesting at the speed of the thought, if you can understand that. So
yeah.
Literally before the thought is completed in your mind, whatever you're thinking about, whether it's good or bad, constructive or not, will appear. And we have to prepare for that. So, yes, the frequencies have been stepped up substantially. And many people are talking about the fifth dimension. A large aspect of the training that we're going through, whether you're spiritual, whether you're just into the material world, whether you're into religion, there is a training program in play on the planet right now. A lot of people don't realize it. And we're being asked to feel love and compassion. We're being asked to monitor our thoughts. It's very important that we monitor our thoughts. So we have to start sort of practicing to think positively, creatively, the way that we want. While I was thinking about we will be creating with our minds, you know, still with the intellectual sort of line of things, I ran into another teacher recently, Adrian Vlo, who said, we're going to have to start creating with our hearts, and just sort of stumped me. I said, well, gee, how do you do that? He said, well, it's in the ancient books, and it's not really detailed or written down anywhere of how to do it. It's just going to have to be from experience. So that's a lot of what's happening right now. We have these human attributes. I call them powers of the human, where you have to focus on being, I guess, as positive creatively as you can. Whatever you think, if you start thinking of snakes or negative things, they'll manifest right there in front of you once we reach this level, which is right there, I guess, a little bit in the future. But right now, things have accelerated tremendously. I think it was New Year's Day about two years ago, New Year's Eve, actually. I was in bed. I was complaining. You know, I've been around for a long time. I was just going through these thoughts saying, I've been here forever. From through Atlantis to 13,000 years, I've been Egyptian, I've been Mexican, and I've been a shaman, an old man with a cane. All these were lifetimes I had following Atlantis. I saw myself someplace around Easter Island where there were these statues and that we know of, the statues of Easter Island, except that they weren't statues. I was looking at one of them, and suddenly I saw tears coming down. And they looked very sad, you know, the ones with the big lips and things like that. And I realized these were beings at some point in time here on our planet. They were actually living beings. And I started to complain, and I fell asleep. And someone appeared in my room. They just sort of just stepped into the room, through the wall again. And I opened my eyes, and what I saw was all of my bedroom walls right around me in a square the wall just started vanishing, coming down. Like just literally disappearing, and I could see further out in the distance where we were approaching something like that looked like dawn. In other words, we were coming out of the darkness of the fourth of the third dimension and approaching light, and we were right there on this sort of brink of wherever eternity, I guess, where there was a huge light brightness coming in, brightness that was as bright as I called it 10 million suns put together. Maybe that's extreme. But I guess, think about 10,000 suns might be a better description. That's how bright it is. It's so bright that if we don't prepare for that level of light by increasing our frequency, this is much further into the distance, into the future. If we don't prepare for it so we can resonate properly and not be affected by the light in a negative way, it's the sort of light that will literally burn you. Like, it'll just scorch you, that's it.
Does any of this, because we're being prepared and spiritually we're raising up levels, is any of this, is there like a deadline? And what I'm thinking of, there's actually two specific things I'm thinking of right now about deadlines and things like that. the end of the Mayan calendar, which is what, 2012 or
2012. They speak of that, yes.
Yeah, and then there's also an interesting thing how St. Malachi has only predicted two more popes. I'm sorry. There's like, you know, the list of popes that Malachi predicted.
Mm-hmm.
There's only two more. And so that gives you like some kind of end of a timeline in two different ways.
Yes, I can tell you what my experience is from my side of life is that I know of the 2012 deadline. Things are changing a lot. I don't know if that's still the deadline for the end of this yuga or this cycle of time is what you call it. But a lot of us believe that. And I do remember at some point, I think it was a few months ago, where someone took me and took me sort of, I felt like I was flying through the sky. Now, this was a totally different experience. Someone that was extremely powerful was gliding me through the sky, I'm up above buildings and neighborhoods and things like that. And we ended up in some place that was like the highest church in the land. I'll call it a cathedral. I know where it is, I know what it is, but I can't say what it is. But let's just call it the highest church in the land, whether it's this land or the European land or wherever. But we end up in this place with priests in black robes, and there's this being next to me who is totally different from everyone else. He is young, very young, and he has on something like a jumpsuit, like what I guess you call these cosmic brothers would wear. And he's sitting across from me, and I'm sitting down across from him. And in the back I can hear these priests yelling and screaming and literally using negative words in one aspect of them was, and they're yelling at each other and they're discussing the situation. The situation is, should we tell humanity, should we tell the public about this impending cataclysm? So, and one half of them don't want to reveal the information to us. The other half of them does because it's so extreme. Now, this is not Atlantis. This is not from the past. This is the future. And so this is one of the deadlines. It's a warning that I have at the end of my book called The Warning, The Cataclysm. So the priests are up in arms about whether or not they should tell this particular situation to us. So the being, he takes me in there. We leave. I don't know if anything was resolved. But he brings me back, puts me down in a neighborhood, someplace I have no idea about. And then I'm back in my room again. I don't really know how I got there. But as he's bringing me back to my room, he says, he gives me a warning. And basically it reads, if a civilization, a people, were told it is time to get something up into the sky, and God decided that it was probably not worth it to try, would it still be worth it to try? And that's just a part of it, but it's an extreme situation where there's something coming in, I believe. He didn't say specifically what. That's coming in from the outside, again, once again. Something coming from the outside, coming through our skies, that our space agencies, NASA and the Russian European space agencies have to prepare for. I think it's more associated with the European side, more so than the American side. But we have to prepare for it, and they're very concerned. These, let's call them gods, you know, they talk about the Anunnaki as gods, and but these are the cosmic brothers, the people that you see in the huge light ships and so on that guide our planet. They're extremely concerned that it is so extreme that they're thinking, is it worth it for them to try? But we should try also to get something up into the sky. He didn't say what the something is. So I'm thinking now we're looping back around again to what we were doing at Atlantis, perhaps getting a shield up, perhaps getting some sort of observation orbiter type thing up, you know, like a Voyager satellite, I don't know what. But it has to be an intercept mission. And it's going to be so devastating that if we miss the mark, they are thinking that our timing is going to be off. Our timing with this, whatever it is coming in from outside, that they didn't tell me what it was, is going to be off. And so they gave me this warning, and then he puts me down and says, you have to save the world. So I'm like, I have to save the world. So I, you know, the only thing I could do was put it in my book to share with people who would read it. But I did pick up the phone, and I called a friend of mine that I called Throg. I was working at one of the top 10 technological companies in the world. And I went to him, I gave him a poll, I said, well, you're associated with NASA. He was associated with NASA at the time. He was a sort of link between this company and NASA. And I said, you know, I just had this warning. It's probably not along the lines of the way you live your life because I'm a spiritual person, but I'm just going to tell you because I don't know what to do with it. And you're a scientist, and so I guess, you know, you can try to figure out something. So I told him that I was given this warning that says there's if a civilization of people were told to get something up into the sky, and the gods decided that it would not be worth it to try, you know, should we still go ahead and do it ourselves? And I said, I don't know what to do with this warning. That's just, I can only give you a part of it. The rest of it is in the book. And he said, well, you know, I'll pass it on to some people at NASA. We can, you know, talk about it. But this was about 3 years ago, I think, approximately, that I got this warning. So there's something huge going on. It has the priest up in arms in high places. And I know that the scientists, the astronomers and the scientists are working feverishly on it. Even the Vatican priests rushed to put up one of the biggest mirrors on the planet someplace in Arizona. I mean, and even they are looking out for something, and no one is saying what it is. And you may have heard a lot of rumors recent years about close passerbys and things like that, you know, asteroids or meteorites and so on. You may have heard about those. Those are just the passerbys. The question is, what is the warning about? Is it one that is going to impact? And if we miss the mark, if our timing is off here with our space agencies and we miss that mark, we miss the timing of whatever it is we have to send up, then we'll be in trouble. So it's so big that your knees sort of start to shake when you wrap your mind around it. But we just had something here, I think it was earlier this year in January, the neat comet passed by.
Yes.
Right. And it wasn't that. But I'll tell you a quick story about that. I was speaking with Jones a little, and this comet is supposed to be ever so huge. It's several times bigger than Jupiter, several more times bigger than the Earth. And it passed right through our orbit, or Earth's orbit. And with something like that happening, it passed by our sun, and there was a massive solar eruption. It affected our sun in a huge way. This tremendous solar flare and solar eruption occurred. That's how it affected our sun. So if it affects the sun like that, and we're just this little tiny planet, and it passes through our orbit, the question is, where was Earth at the time that it passed? The Neat Comet was tremendous. It was huge. It was large. So where was the planet? So I said to him, well, what happened? How come we're still here if that thing is so massive and, you know, it has this tremendous pull on our sun? It would have devastated our planet. I mean, we wouldn't have been there. He said we weren't there. I said, what do you mean we weren't there? He said, well, we're actually interacting with brothers, you know, the space brothers right now are interacting with us a lot more. And they have the technologies, the capabilities, and so on, that they can move us out of the way. And I said, oh, my God, yeah, that's why we're still here. He said, yes.
Well, let's hope that when it comes to be our turn, we'll be able to know what to do then. It sounds like the ball is rolling, though, as far as watching out for ourselves. I mean, after all, like you said, the high priests, the space agencies, they're all looking for something. And hopefully they'll know what to do when they find it.
This is something that's been prophesied, I believe, it's in ancient times. It's in old books and things like that. So it's a prophecy that is somewhere in the future or timeline. And it does not have to be, I guess, is basically what it is. It doesn't have to be as long as we get our act together and get things going. But it's not meant to generate fear. It was just a warning that was given to me only because of what my past has been as a Melchizedek priest, you know, as a visitor here, as being involved in technology eons ago, and things like that. It was a warning that was given to me from these cosmic brothers of light, and I didn't know what to do with it, so I just went straight to the scientists here. And not that I, you know, not that I might have had anything major to do with any changes that might occur, but keeping it to myself was not a good idea. It was pretty heavy for me to sort of bear,
well, I see,
to hold on to. It was pretty extreme.
Well, I see movements in the right direction anyway. You know, the scientists and the priests are at least looking for it. I have a question. What do you do now? I know in the bio it said that you work on the East Coast and the West Coast, and you give lectures and things like that. How do those work? How do people find you and attend these things?
The name of the book is Door to Atlantis, and the Mars Atlantis Alliance. It has a beautiful cover, and it has the symbol of the Martians on the front, which is two interlocking circles. It's called the Vesica Pisces, and in there I chose to put the colors of the Earth and the colors of Mars to interlock the two planets, where the front cover, the planet Mars, even though it's not the correct size, but it was the symbol that was mostly important that I was trying to portray. Sort of, you can see it sort of reaching into the Earth, into the structure of the Earth, as to signify that Martian life did come from there here a long time ago, and there's all kinds of life interacting with us. As I mentioned just now, with regard to the Neat Comet and what occurred, that was a tremendous situation that I think sort of went over everybody's heads, that we were literally moved out of the way of this big thing that was passing. But I lecture on the East Coast and the West Coast on my book and on this experience, because people often ask me about it. I have other books. The most recent one is called Children of the Violet Ray. That deals with a new wave of children that are incarnating. They're very powerful, they're very psychic, they have the seventh sense telepathy, they move objects with their minds. Some of them might be brand new babies in your family. All of these things I discuss in there. In another book I talk about, it's called On the Brink of Mastery. I teach a meditation called the Orion Mastery Meditation, and it talks about the human powers and human attributes that I mentioned we have to pay attention to try to get our thoughts under control to some extent, and try to raise their frequency, because we are going through different levels of light and we're moving pretty fast. And so I lecture on these things, and you can reach me at my email, which is doortoatlantis@yahoo.com. It's the same title of the book that will be coming out at firstbooks.com. I believe it's in the middle of in October, in a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll be able to get it from firstbooks.com. And you can reach me. My website is www.doortoatlantis.com also. And the email is doortoatlantis@yahoo.com. And you can reach me that way.
I have a question, too.
At the moment, I'm working on another book. And so I spend some time at home at my computer. I go over to the West Coast. I do some workshops on the East Coast. And I teach this meditation called the Merkaba Meditation, which is based on that same device that I spoke about, the star tetrahedron. It's a field of energy that's around everything natural. It's around planets. It's around human bodies. It's around plants, flowers, you name it. It's a crystalline geometric field that is responsible for life in a big way. And I don't think there's anything you won't find it around that's alive and that's organic and living. So with the mind, what you do is you create this electromagnetic field of counterclockwise spinning energy that shoots out about 50 feet from the spine. And it looks like a sort of energy envelope, and it's called a Merkaba field. It allows you to move through time, through space, interdimensionally. If you're very advanced with it, if you've had it activated for several years, you can easily move through time with it, you know, in association with whoever your guides might be, like my situation was. So it's just a different principle. It's a light technology, you call it. And what the Martians had was the actual advanced technology to it, the hardcore technology, where they used these ancient geometric principles, and they created the technology based on the same principles and created this hyperdimensional field. So it's two very similar things. One is technology and one is generated from the mind, where you have this field around you which can act as a, and that is one way that you can increase your frequency, if you activate this electromagnetic field through meditation. And that's what triggered me back then, when this whole event occurred.
I have a quick question for you.
Sure.
Myself, personally, and Doug's just going to smile when he hears this, I'm very, I study on the pyramids a lot. That's one of my focuses. in life right now, actually. I know that I've looked at the pictures. I've looked at the high res. I've looked at all the pictures I can from the photos of Mars. Itself. And it's a theory that's been running around for a while now since the photos came out that in the one area they believe they have pictures of pyramids on Mars also.
Oh yeah. There was, like I said, there was life there, and I'm living proof to that based on my experience that took me back, and my life was literally recreated at that period of time where we were in Atlantis. But we got here from Mars. I think as the group left, the memory only starts off with us leaving Mars. Whatever happened, whatever reason we were leaving, I think these people who watched me and guide us and so on and so forth thought that it might have been just too traumatic. It might have been even more traumatic than the memory of Atlantis when the Martians were there, to remember all of the details as to why we were literally running from Mars to find another place to survive, destination Earth and destination Atlantis. So, but there were pyramids there that we built, and everything there is on a much bigger scale. As you might have heard, we were 10 feet tall, so everything would have been about, you know, big buildings, big structures. I don't have a lot of recollection about Mars. That's something that I could go back and go through a memory of that, but I haven't chosen to do that. Mm-hmm. I just see the group leaving Mars. We just sort of lift off in what we call these Merkaba fields, because we are priests, and it's a part of our ministry to teach the spirituality about creation, about life, to teach astronomy and to work with technology, scientists and priests. And I think the Vatican has an aspect that is like that too, where their ministry is astronomy, even though they're priests. And it was similar. I believe we were Melchizedek priests, and the symbol of our order was the star tetrahedron. But when we left there, there were pyramids everywhere. And I really can't go into any detail about it because I don't have a lot of recollection about that. It was deemed too traumatic for me to remember. But the condition of the planet shows that there was life there. Our pictures will reveal that there are all kinds of ruins there. There's a face on Mars that we have talked about over and over in discussions with people like Richard Hoagland and so on. I mean, that is huge evidence that there was life on Mars that existed there a very long time ago, 1-2 million years ago. Now they're finding water channels and things like that. And basically all I can say is that, you know, I'm just living proof that we were there. And there was a civilization there that had advanced technologies and super intelligence. And, you know, we were able to hear the music of the spheres. And what that is that every planet in our solar system resonates at a certain frequency. Each one is different. And so it makes this sound, literally. Each one has a sound. And it's called music of the spheres, and it's like the sine wave, and you can hear it literally. So we have these abilities, like the sentinel I mentioned, where the hearing is so powerful, so acute, that you can hear each different sound that the planets make. And I think that human beings can hear the sounds, but we've just become oblivious to it because we're caught up in our lives and things like that. Probably monks and so on would be able to hear. Those people who sit quietly for long hours can hear the music of the spheres, if you know what I mean. But I think it's very exciting that the Mars Spirit Rover just lifted off a few months ago. We'll be getting a lot more pictures as time goes by that will eventually prove that life was there, that it is linked to Earth, and primarily the Sphinx that is there, the hominid structure that is part leonine, part human, the face on Mars, linked to our Sphinx here in Egypt, will eventually prove that life came from there here. And many of the Martians are back. Most of them are teachers, authors like myself. Of course, there's the other 2,000 that I mentioned that are involved in governments and societies and financial institutions. And they run our planet, and, you know, they keep us going, the different governments of the countries. They're still very powerful beings. I don't have a lot of details about them. We were sort of a little exclusive group off by ourselves because we were priests. But I do see them. I did see them at one point in a square in Atlantis. They were also dressed in robes, and they weren't very much involved in the sort of spiritual meditation things that we were doing as a group of 22, 23, which I call the contingent, the original Mars Atlantis Voyagers in my book. But I think there are a couple of things that they're sending up, the orbiters and so on that they're sending up, that will be sending back pictures that eventually would link Mars, Earth, Atlantis, and Egypt together.
Well, that's just a staggering thing. Is that, yeah, I mean, this evidence has just come out over the last year too,
and it's
where people are going, hey, look, this is a real thing here. There's not a lot
Mars
of speculation
is,
anymore.
Mars is the closest it has been to us
in tens of thousands.
Yeah,
wasn't it like 60,000?
4,000 to 75,000 years.
Yeah.
So I mean,
wow.
When you look at that and see how close it is to the planet, if you've been watching the skies and using your telescopes, it's not hard to see how life could have made a short jump or a short skip here. A million years ago, if you will. That's how we got here. We used our Merkaba fields to come here. The priest did. The other 2,000 or so used the ionic propulsion ships to get here. And, you know, they lifted off. I just have this memory of rushing to, with scrolls, to put them away inside of pyramids that were somewhere towards the middle of the planet. And we had 24 hours to get there because we saw all of the technological advanced elite, if you will, elite of Mars, which were the educators, the financiers, and the scientists and so on. They were leaving in ships, and that's the only, it's just a glimmer of a memory that I have.
Was Earth the only destination for the Martian race, or?
I remember, yes, because the life here was very similar to ours. The big problem was is that coming here would have and did put us back a good 2 million years behind our civilization. I mean, we were already harnessing what I call the jitter. If you ever see UFOs in our skies, you see that they do something. There's this inertial movement. And they do what I call the jitterbug. There's a fast up and down movement, there's a quick side to side movement, and it's just they're doing the jitter. And we were harnessing this energy that is now being called zero point energy. Before it was called free energy.
Mm-hmm.
And using ion propulsion ships to travel. So we were doing all of that stuff. You know, we weren't taking our energy from plants and oil and coal and so on and so forth. But while we were there, here is when we came here, that was the sort of thing that was going on. So we came to a civilization that was a very young, evolving humanity, a young civilization compared to ours, which you can almost call like a father civilization, because we were a good 200 years... I'm sorry, a good 2 million years ahead in our evolution and our technologies and so on.
Well, with that, we've got to close the show. So remind us what your website is one more time.
It's http://, and it's www.dooratoatlantis.com. And I look forward to talking with you again. There are other paranormal experiences like Bigfoot and extraterrestrial contacts and starship sightings and things like that, unfortunately, that we didn't get around to. But
you're going to need to come back again then.
Yeah, you have to, because I wanted to talk so badly about Bigfoot, because I so want to go, you know, see a Bigfoot. So you're going to have to come back.
I will, yes. I had the Bigfoot sighting in Pennsylvania only a year ago, and it was quite scary. And
I can't wait to talk about it, but for now, we got to close the show.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure talking
Thank
you
so much.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Diane
Goodman Larson, author of the book Door to Atlantis. So, thank you so much.
Okay.
Take care of yourself. Bye, Diane.
Wow. That was an awesome, awesome, awesome hour.
I don't even know where to...
Well, I have like 8 million questions that are coming in my mind, because it was a lot of information.
Well, we have her email. We can
have her email. I'm going to email
her. We're
going
to bug the hell out of her now.
and of course, I'm going to go get that book.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Because
This ties in so much. It ties in so much.
It does.
We were talking about that before the show. I'm like, you know, the more we do this stuff and the more stuff we talk about it, the more it's all common to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real mystery now to me is like, okay, I still don't know what the hell this is all about, but I want to know why it's related to that.
Yeah, this is related to that, related to the other thing. A lot of the things about Atlantis that she talks about coincides almost exactly with everything that I know of that Edgar Cayce has said.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's just amazing how it's an independent, observation of something that I had already read about. And only hers is obviously because she relived it much more detailed, which is awesome. And I'm gonna buy that book.
Get the book. DoorToAtlantis.com. Yep. Check out her website. There is an excerpt from her book on there also.
Yes, and DoorToAtlantis@yahoo.com is her email.
Yeah.
Our website, of course, is ghostlytalk.com.
Mm-hmm.
So go to ghostlytalk.com for the archives and things like that. Also, pioneer.rolo.net.
Yes.
That's Pioneer Radio Networks, and that's who we're broadcast live on every Sunday from.
We're also being rebroadcast on KSSX.com, too.
Of course.
They're taking care of us now, too, and there's a couple other people that are going to be picking us up very soon.
Yep.
Emails are rolling in, and we're taking care of them.
Thank goodness.
We're trying to. So on that note, I'm Scott L.
I'm Doug.
And this was Ghostly Talk.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from The Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons.